So a few reflections on emptiness here. So emptiness is the English translation of the Pali term sunyata. Sunya is empty. Sunyata makes it like that's the ness, like it makes it into a thing, such the suchness, the emptiness, the and so emptiness has the sense of it being a quality or a characteristic that is held by things, entities, experiences. And so in this one of the earliest texts that talks about emptiness, Majjhima Nikaya 121, Middle Length Discourses 121, and it's it begins with the Buddha reflecting in a very direct physical way that this room that they're in, it was the Dharma Hall at a monastery called the Stilt Longhouse of Migara's mother. And the Buddha says, see this Stilt Longhouse, it's empty of horses and goats and mares and cows and dozy-dotes and maresy-dotes and all the things are not here. And so recognizing that this Stilt Longhouse is empty of horses, you can perceive the absence of those horses, but also the absence of a certain kind of busyness that they would bring. The basic definition of emptiness is that a thing, and thing here means object, entity, you know, temporary bounded space, like myself or this room or this sangha, is empty of what is not there. So it's not that we go automatic, we don't have to jump right to, you know, ontological cosmic emptiness, like emptiness is the nature of all things. You can start with this very basic physical reflection. This room is empty of what's not here. You know, some of our Sangha friends are not present tonight. Anna, bless her soul, is not here this evening. So the Sangha this evening is empty of Anna's, in a very basic way, right? And so from this basic definition, we get an instruction, first of all, that's actually just a really lovely somatic instruction, you can think of it, to attune to absence. So often we attune to presence rather than absence, but to attune to what's not here. And in a sense, that's a kind of, it's almost like when I was a dancer, I was doing a lot of contact improvisation, and there's one way that you can, a really common way to relate to another body that you're dancing with is to relate to the places of contact or to the form that that body's making. There's their arm in space, there's a leg, there's a head. But you can also attune to what's called the negative space, which is all of the empty space around the body. There's a space under the arm and to the side of the head. And you can inhabit those spaces. You can move in those spaces. You can recognize the absence of body in a space where the body is not in this moment. And so this meditation partly is tuning us into a certain kind of negative space or a space of absence. And I really appreciate that it's quite physical. You know, this Stilt Longhouse is empty of horses, right? The Buddha doesn't start with this Stilt Longhouse is empty of the illusion of any substantial personhood. We'll get to that, but first it's empty of horses. Okay. So then the meditation the Buddha gives is, he says, suppose a meditator goes out to the wilderness, you know, to a conducive, quiet place, free of the bustle of people, not in the city. They attune their perception, so they bring mindfulness awake, right? They open their senses, they attune to their perception, to the perception of wilderness, So there's this first gesture where you can tune your perception. You bring your attention to something, you open to it, you get in sync with it. You know, and you can do it in any moment. Like right now, I can attune my perception to the screen with this, you know, dozen boxes on it or so. I can also attune my perception to the rain on the roof and the sound. And I could just choose to do that, right? Or I can remember being in the East Bay. I was in Berkeley this weekend. I could remember that, and then I can attune my perception to being out here in, you know, the hills of western rural Sonoma County. And if I attune my perception to that, all of these kind of sensate, you know, evidence in a way comes forward in my experience. I notice the rain. I notice the frogs. I notice the space between me and my neighbors. I notice the presence of the redwood trees in the gully and the wet grassy ground. And, you know, I notice the trickling streams outside the house and the sound of the wind coming through the over the ridges from the ocean. And so having attuned my perception to the perception of wilderness or wherever I am, the Buddha says, the meditator recognizes this wilderness is more peaceful than the city and appreciates that peacefulness. And again, as we were doing in the meditation, there's a tuning into the peacefulness. Oh, this is more peaceful than that. And it's important here to remember, this is really a very basic trauma resolution principle as well, that what's present here that is less stressful than that is not necessarily, you know, by itself what we would call pleasurable. Like I might be quite anxious or quite in pain or whatever is going on right now, but it's less stressful than this other thing. So on the spectrum of dukkha, painfulness, to sukha, pleasure or ease, a 6 on the pain scale is better, is more pleasurable than a 9 on the pain scale, if the scale is 1 to 10, with 10 being more painful. And so the appreciation is that, you know, any decrease in suffering is a good thing. To speak to a couple of the reflections that people brought forward, this is for sure intrinsically a comparing maneuver, right? And that's how I actually come up with the perception of my state as pleasurable. If I don't compare my state to anything, it might or might not be what I call pleasurable. But we might back up even from that and say, to call something pleasurable automatically means I have to compare it to the range of experiences that I have. That's what recognition is. So if I can say, oh, this feels good, it only feels good, you know, in comparison to other things that have also felt good, other things that have also felt not so good. And so I think that's a really natural function of the mind. That is a natural function of the cognitive system. As long as there's not attachment, it's not a problem. We're not trying to not cognize the world. Cognition is one of the 6 senses. It's a way to perceive and understand the world. We're not trying to not do that. But we're trying to not suffer, you know, when comparison gives rise to craving or attachment. So, you know, if I perceive the stressfulness of, you know, the busier city and I like the peacefulness of the wilderness, if I then say, you know, I hate the city, I only want to live in the wilderness, how can I buy a house here? I can't buy a house here, it's way too expensive. And I could spin in that proliferation of story, and that could give rise to some suffering. I know that suffering pretty well, actually. So there's, you know, there's comparison that leads to suffering, and there's comparison that leads to tranquility by teaching us how to shepherd our states toward the increasingly peaceful. Because there is a fundamental preference in practice. There's a preference toward happiness and away from suffering. Like, why would we do the whole thing if not for that? So the training is to recognize attachment when it's present, not necessarily comparison, which is a simple function of the cognitive mind. But another person also said this thing, a little tied to that, about the neutral. And, you know, this relates to there being a spectrum of pleasant to unpleasant. The quality we might call neutral is pleasant compared to the more painful. And so we can, you know, we can incline toward it, you know, as a kind of relief. And in this meditation on emptiness, where we are recognizing the ease or pleasure or neutrality present in the moment compared to a more stressful situation elsewhere, there is, you know, there's an appreciation, there's a gratitude, there's often relief. And where this can go then is toward a letting go of attachment to that more stressful situation. So, and again, if it goes too far, if you overshoot letting go, you get into attachment to, you know, renunciation or whatever, attachment to this is temporary, you know, this is, you know, like the deep peacefulness of retreat. This is, you know, this peacefulness is based on conditions. It will pass, it'll change. But the meditation then, and in this discourse, I'll post the link to the discourse under the talk in the Facebook group so you can read it. I encourage you to read it. It's not a long discourse, thus the shorter analysis of emptiness title. There's a longer one that follows it, which is a little more complex. But the Buddha lays out a sequential meditation that starts with the perception of the wilderness as more peaceful than the city, and progresses through stages where concentration develops, and then the meditator moves through a series of increasingly more peaceful or less busy meditative states, namely the what are called the immaterial states or the immaterial jhanas sometimes. The perception of space as infinite, the perception of consciousness as infinite, the perception of nothingness, or the perception of nothingness as infinite, and then the state called neither perception nor non-perception. And these are extraordinarily subtle meditative states. They are not somatic states, so they are states where the somatic perception of the body is temporarily set down in order to let the perception disengage from the stressfulness even of that and rest in the sense of just infinite spaciousness and then infinite consciousness, which is subtler and less busy than spaciousness, and then in nothingness, which is subtler and less busy than consciousness, and then in neither perception nor non-perception, which is sort of like neutral taken all the way, where there's not even the sense of like I'm perceiving anything, but you're also not unconscious, and so there's this strange liminal state there. These are very deep states. Don't think about them too much, but they are accessible in deep meditation. What they suggest is a progress of increasing subtraction of stimuli. After this final immaterial state, neither perception nor non-perception, the meditator lands in one final, it's hard even to call it a state or a resting place, but it's called the signless immersion of the heart. The signless immersion of the heart. So a sign is like some bit of information coming in through the perception. The heart is the citta, the heart mind, the unified knowing faculty, knowing and feeling faculty. So the knowing and feeling faculty called the heart is immersed in a state where there is no distinguishing signs coming forward. Right, so this is something like a vast emptiness, and this is not, it's not a permanent state. This is really just, this is a training that you visit in meditation in order to realize, in order to have an insight that everything that you perceive, every piece of information, every feeling, every thought, every sensory input is all in a certain way busy. And that's not that, that's not a judgment. It's not that it's bad at all. It's just that it's busy. You know, it's as if I had a room filled with some mixture of the most extraordinary, you know, gorgeous art and precious objects and gifts from friends and meaningful, you know, letters and beautiful things, and also a whole bunch of trash and weapons and terrible stuff and stuff that I inherited that I really don't want. And it's all there. And bit by bit, I'm cleaning out the room. And initially, my temptation is to first clean out all the junk and keep all the treasures. So I do some amount of that. That's called healing. You do a lot of that if you can. Clear out the junk first, for sure. Some amount of it. But then, here you are, meditating in the wilderness. You've cleaned out a lot of your junk. You've just got a few treasures left, right? The treasures of the Dharma, the treasures of the Sangha, the treasures of, you know, the path and the way and your friends and goodness and virtue and, you know, mindfulness and all the good things, right? Right? The beautiful earth and the deities and goodness is all here. All of the treasures are here. And then you realize that the room is still full of stuff. And so temporarily, in order to really perceive the room in its purity, you take the treasures out just for a while, you set them aside, and then you clean the whole room. And bit by bit, you clear out until you can actually perceive the room. And then you realize that a room is actually a fairly busy thing to have a structure. And so then you take down the room, right? So you get where this is going. As a temporary teaching for the heart, you clear out through deep meditation everything that you're perceiving. And you hang out for a moment in this signless immersion of the heart, the empty room, not even a room, empty of everything that's not there. And everything at this point is not there. It's the signless immersion. And then the text says, emerging from that, which is to say, you leave that space and you go back out into the place where all your stuff is, you know? It's the whole world of stuff is right here. So you come out of meditation, but you come out having seen that everything is busy, dukkha. Everything has the nature of some amount of stressfulness. But having seen that everything can be emptied, that you can perceive everything for what it is, as having the quality of stressfulness, the quality of impermanence, the quality of not being myself, you emerge liberated. So this is an alternate pathway to full liberation that doesn't include the classic reflections on rebirth and karma and uprooting the defilements. This is really the pathway to liberation that goes through the subtractive method. It's not a deep insight into how connected you are to everything. It's the opposite. This is the pathway to recognize that it's possible to rest in the perception of the absence of everything. And that when you do that, you realize that none of those things, even the most precious of the treasures that was in the room, is intrinsic to the room, needs to be there. No part of it is your absolute true self that you identify with. Even the most precious thing, myself, my relationships, my beloveds, it can all be set down just for the moment of the meditation, and you can see, oh, this doesn't define me. This doesn't define the room. This is not the substance of the universe. This is a conditioned phenomena, it's come together by the inflow of all the conditions. Someone made this treasure. How beautiful it is. And I can set it down, and I can pick it up again, and I can set it down, and I can pick it up again. And there's, once you see that you can do that with everything, including the sense of who I am and what I have to do here, then It's over. The it being attachment. Attachment to all those things, attachment to the trash, attachment to the treasures, is just over. From there, the return to the world, you know, has particularly has the quality of agency or choice in it, because once you come out of a meditation like that, where you can see that everything is just conditioned, none of it is intrinsic to existence, to space, to the room, to your life, to who you are, you have so much more choice about what you then pick up, right? And this is where you emerge from emptiness into a space that that is really marked by compassion and love, where you come out and you see all the people, you know, scrambling around, searching for treasure, hoarding trash, you know, struggling with their trash, tripping over their treasures without seeing them. Like, the world is a chaotic mess of people who don't realize that it's possible to be peaceful. And so then compassion arises, and you can pick up anything you want, anything that seems useful in this moment. And, you know, part of why we call the triple gem of Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha the gems is that to the awakened heart mind, this is one of the things that's worth picking up. Not because you need it, but because it's a really good teaching device to help others. And so you pick up whatever's needed to do the work you want to do in the world. But any kind of constriction that the heart once had toward anything that you thought was the nature of the room is now drained away by this kind of deep subtractive meditation. So this is the beginning of the concept of emptiness that will become the centerpiece of the entire Mahayana Buddhist understanding. But here it is in the Pali Canon, in this very simple form: recognize what's not here, appreciate that, and then continue in a stepwise way, letting go of whatever is the most busy and stressful in the mind stream, and dropping to a level of deeper peace, and then finding whatever is still stressful and dropping that. And you just keep doing that until there's nothing left. And then emerging from that, there's just there's a certain, you know, beauty, I think, and power in how we can then relate to the world. All right. So we'll continue with this for some weeks, I imagine. I'll we'll pull out some other threads in it. But we'll pause there for now.